previously on Unsolved.
And he looked me in my face like this. And he was just staring at me. And he had his arm around me. And his daddy said, "She looked like your mom?" And he said, "Yes." He knew I looked like his mama. He knew that I looked like his mother. He knew it. It's like he knew me already.
From USA Today and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved Season 4, A Missing Girl, A Search for Truth. I'm Gina Barton. Chapter 6, The Road Trip. Ayanna Patterson was sure an at-home DNA test would prove a little boy from Ohio was her grandson. And that would mean the boy's mother, Lisa, was actually Ayanna's daughter, Alexis, who by then had been missing for 14 years. The DNA results were supposed to be the resolution of a promising tip the media and the police had gotten in the summer of 2016, when Lisa's ex-husband, Josh, saw an age-progressed photo of Alexis. The strong resemblance, along with some strange stories Lisa had told him about her past, led Josh to believe she was the missing Milwaukee girl. The fact that Lisa and Alexis had a lot of matching characteristics, including a bump on her finger and a birthmark, had convinced Ayanna it was true. She was confident the results would prove to everyone her daughter was alive.
But unfortunately, it came out inconclusive.
Still, Ayanna was unfazed. Inconclusive didn't mean she was wrong. A few weeks later, Ayanna was dealt another blow when the police announced the results of the DNA test they had done after getting a swab from Lisa.
Breaking news, a disappointing end to a lead in the case of missing girl Alexis Patterson. According to police, a DNA sample taken from a woman thought to be the missing girl is not a match.
When Ayanna heard that report, she remained skeptical. She spoke with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that same day.
Today, I got the results on the media. I didn't get a call to after they released it on the media stating that Lisa is not Alexis. I don't believe that. Absolutely not. And the reason why is because I just gave the MPD my DNA yesterday, okay? And they told me, the lieutenant, I talked to the lieutenant today, he told me that they matched Lisa's DNA with the DNA that they got 14 years ago of Alexis's. Well, first of all, who gave you the DNA 14 years ago? You never received the DNA from me. What DNA did you use? From a toothbrush? Nah. Give me the real DNA. Use my DNA. Put my DNA to Lisa's DNA and take it from there.
Crocker Stevenson, who covered the story for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, thought it was strange that the news release didn't go into detail about those things.
So the statement from police, and they said nothing more, was that DNA excluded this woman from being Alexis Patterson.
But no explanation.
Like where the DNA came from, who did the DNA test. I think they might have said the crime lab. I don't remember exactly. But it wasn't an explicit statement, nor was anyone from Cold Case willing to come to the phone and just talk about it. Which is weird in my opinion, because this is a case that really people were hurt by her disappearance.
Lisa's ex-husband, Josh, who first posed the theory that Lisa could be Alexis, also didn't believe the DNA results. He got on the phone with a TV reporter shortly after the police released them.
Once I thought that she was Alexis, my intention was to prove that she was, but I guess we're not there yet.
Josh's then-fiancée, Sasha, who later became his second wife, told me in 2020 that they still believed something shady must have happened and that Lisa actually was Alexis. But they had to let it go.
they actually put a protection order out on Josh. They pulled his parental rights, claiming that he was too mentally unstable for thinking she was another human being. So yes, it's affected so many people's lives on so many aspects. So the depth of proving that Lisa is Alexis is just very important on so many different aspects.
That same year, during one of my first conversations with Ayanna, I asked her why, if Lisa really was Alexis, she wouldn't just admit it. Ayanna told me she thinks the young woman acted out of fear. Fear that everything she knew about her life had been a lie.
I know she's scared. Yeah. I know this.
I asked Ayanna, what would she say to the woman if she could?
You don't have to be afraid. I know you've been with these people for all of these years, and you believe that these people are your family, but they're not your family. And I know in your heart, Alexis, you know that Mama not gonna give up on you.
By all accounts, Ayanna has changed a lot since 2002. Crocker told me the contrast between the desperate 23-year-old mother he met back then and the woman he got to know 14 years later shocked him.
When you look at Ayanna now and you look at what she looked like before, she looks like a different woman. When I first met Ayanna, she looked terrible. I mean, she just looked like a person just tired and worn out. And by the end of this, you know, and you see her these days, she is a much stronger, energized woman.
Kathy Spano, the retired cold case detective, noticed a change too. She said the version of Ayanna she read about in the police reports from the time of Alexis's disappearance was nothing like the one she spoke with years later.
She certainly has turned her life around, and she seems to be, you know, a better person. I think she's spiritual, and I think she's not using drugs anymore. She really cleaned herself up.
For the record, Ayanna told me she's never had a drug problem, although she has used marijuana. But she did have a lot of other issues in the aftermath of Alexis's disappearance. Ayanna's marriage to Laurent Bourgeois broke down. She told me part of the reason was that the police were so convinced he had something to do with Alexis's disappearance, she started to doubt him. About a year after Alexis vanished, Laurent was charged with battery and disorderly conduct for beating Ayanna. She told the police he punched her in the face and threatened her with a knife because he thought some other guy had been paging her. The charges were eventually dismissed, but things didn't get any better, and the two of them got divorced in 2005. Ayanna also struggled with the death of the grandmother who raised her, which happened in the middle of her marriage problems. She says the next man she got together with abused her even worse.
I was beat for years. I never even told nobody. I'm talking massively. Beat on every level, like abuse, beat. If you look up, you see I have restraining orders on him. I called the police so many times. Like, that was the worst relationship ever.
When Ayanna split with that man, she had nowhere to go.
You and your daughter were, like, living in your car for a while.
I didn't even have a car. We was homeless.
You didn't have a car.
No, we were homeless. I was walking the street.
Today, Ayanna owns her own home on Milwaukee's northwest side. She has become a vegetarian and believes in the power of crystals and studies numerology. To pay the bills, she does hair. She also sells jewelry and bath salts and lotions she makes herself. She spends a lot of time meditating, and she is committed to helping others in honor of Alexis.
I started Alexis Patterson Hear Our Voice Fingerprints. I did that because in the matter of my daughter's disappearance, I didn't have any DNA or anything on her. And I know when children are small like that, the parents, we don't think about doing the fingerprints or different things. I have a Black Queen Empowerment Leadership Girls Club. And that's in honor of Alexis, where we bring the awareness of young ladies and we teach them about safety. We teach them about security. So even though that mine is gone, my daughter is not the only child that's gone. There are other mothers that has lost children. There are other parents that has missing children. So I'm here to help them find theirs just as well as I'm helping find my own.
Ayanna made all those positive changes in her life after Crocker came to her house with those pictures, and she started believing the young woman in Ohio was her missing daughter.
I was very calm, very, very calm, and happy at the same time, baby. I was calm and I was happy because I knew that she was coming home.
We'll have more after the break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes it takes all your mental energy just to get through the day. Your kid is in crisis, your pet is sick, your partner is stressed out, and that's all before you get to work. It's so easy to get caught up in how much everyone else needs from you and forget to take time for yourself. You cancel your trip to the gym because of a parent-teacher conference. You skip buying that cute outfit because you have to pay the vet bills. But when we spend all of our time prioritizing others, we can end up burned out. And if we're stretched too thin, it's impossible to be there for our loved ones. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep taking care of others without leaving yourself behind. Working with a therapist can help you define your priorities and learn to say no. It empowers you to become the best version of yourself, someone who's there for others but also happy and fulfilled. And it's not just for times of crisis. Therapy can also help you stay zen in the face of everyday problems and stresses of life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, and flexible, so scheduling your appointment won't add to your stress. Just fill out a brief questionnaire about yourself and your goals to be matched with a licensed therapist. If the first match isn't perfect, you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/UN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/UN.
The police in both Milwaukee and in Bryan, Ohio, have denied faking the DNA results. Here's Milwaukee Police Inspector Paul Lau.
Unfortunately, as much as we would like to believe that she was, it turned out through DNA that it wasn't her, that it wasn't Alexis. I think everybody wanted that to be Alexis. Everyone was hoping that it would be Alexis because then we would know and we'd all have some answers.
He also told me there was nothing unusual about the fact that the Milwaukee police asked their counterparts in Ohio to get the swab from Lisa rather than getting it themselves.
Is that something, is that a typical way to do things, to call the police in a different jurisdiction and be like, hey, can you swab this person for me? Or do you usually physically go there? And
it usually depends on certain situations, certain circumstances. If we have an agency that's willing to cooperate with us, another sworn, we work hand in hand with a lot of, you know, these cases. Cases like this, we have homicide investigations in our city where the crime occurred. It's a murder occurred somewhere else. Sometimes they'll come here. Sometimes we'll help them with some follow up, just as a matter of a phone call. Hey, can you check this out for us and verify it? So it's not uncommon.
The police report from Bryan, Ohio is short and to the point. It says Officer Tracy Williamson swabbed Lisa's cheek and that Lisa's boyfriend at the time, Chad, was present. It says the officer then shipped the sample to Milwaukee. Do the police lie sometimes? Of course. I've seen it several times covering police misconduct over the past 20 years, most of them in Milwaukee. But it was more likely that they were telling the truth, and Ayanna just doesn't trust them. She does trust me, though, which left me conflicted about whether to dive into this story at all. On one hand, I really wanted to go to Ohio and get Lisa's DNA and prove once and for all whether or not she was Alexis. But what if I did that and the results came back that it wasn't Alexis after all? What would that do to Ayanna? Crocker told me he struggled with the same thing back in 2016.
As journalists, we want to get to the bottom of things. we believe that somehow that makes the world right. If the truth, you know, be told, the truth will set you free. But in that case, the truth would be crushing to this woman. Even imagining that this woman in Ohio would be willing to give a DNA sample, do you really want to know? I mean, for Ayanna's sake, do we really want to get to the bottom of it? Isn't it kind of a mercy to leave this unresolved?
In the end, that's what Crocker chose to do. He decided not to push the issue any further and just let Ayanna continue to believe Lisa is Alexis. For me, the calculation wasn't so easy. Ayanna really wanted me to tell Alexis's story, and I didn't see how I could do that without getting to the bottom of the DNA issue. During one of our early conversations, back in February 2020, I asked Ayanna about this. She was playing some music in the background that day.
So, I have to ask you a hard hypothetical question.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, say this all works out like the way you want it to, and they go, they get her DNA, they get your DNA again, and then they match it up, and they tell you again, it doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
I know it's some bullshit in the game. I know for a fact it is.
So, nothing can make you...
Ain't nothing.
Think otherwise.
Ain't nothing.
No matter what they do.
Nothing. Ain't nothing they can say to me to say that she ain't mine. Nothing.
After that conversation, the decision got easier. To tell the whole story and to get to the truth, I had to go to Ohio. More after the break. Hey, everybody. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about my friend, Meg Jones. Meg was a general assignment reporter, which meant she covered everything. Everyone in the newsroom loved her, including my reporting partner on Unsolved, Ashley Luthern.
Meg Jones embodied everything that a good journalist is. She was kind, compassionate, and caring, but above all, she was curious.
Meg's specialty was the military and veterans affairs, and she took 8 different trips to Iraq and Afghanistan. Meg was a proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin. In 2018, she did a video about the college's fight song on Wisconsin.
You know, it's just, I'm hardwired into it. And I got, my thinking is that if I live to be 95 years old and I get dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that, and I forget my name and I forget everything, I have a feeling that on Wisconsin still, it's always going to be up there.
Meg was only 58 when she died of pancreatic cancer in December of 2020. I'm telling you about Meg today because I'm hoping you'll join me in honoring her by contributing to a scholarship in her name. If you'd like to make a donation, please visit megjonesfund.org. And thank you. I definitely wanted Ashley, my reporting partner, to come with me for journalistic reasons and safety reasons, but also because she's from Ohio and knows the landscape there much better than I do. She was up for it. A few weeks before we were set to leave, I wrote Lisa a letter asking her to write back and letting her know if I didn't hear from her, I would follow up, either by phone or in person. She didn't reply. Ever the optimist, I ordered the DNA test kit recommended by a genetic genealogist who's been working with USA Today on our larger project about missing kids. Then Ashley and I hit the road. To get from Milwaukee to Bryan, Ohio, we had to drive past Chicago, where I grew up, and South Bend, Indiana, where I worked for more than 8 years early in my career. I've never spent a lot of time in Ohio, but I assumed Bryan would be similar to those places. You know, typical Midwest nice. But I also knew Ashley and I were outsiders, coming to ask questions about a case that had already caused a commotion in this small community. As we got closer to the town, we started to notice a lot of flags and signs supporting former President Trump, who had labeled reporters like us as enemies of the people and accused us of spreading, quote, fake news. As we drove into Lisa's neighborhood, Ashley and I tried to map out our strategy. I'll admit it, and I'm sure you'll be able to hear it in my voice. I was nervous. I was thinking back to what Crocker had told me about how angry Lisa's boyfriend had been on the phone and how much worse that might be in person. I was thinking that maybe since Lisa knew my name from the letter, she might already hate me just for that and might be more willing to talk to Ashley.
My question is, what are the pros and cons of both of us knocking on her door? Do you think because we're both, like, unintimidating-looking women, it's probably fine and that might be better in case she's got the angry boyfriend still there? Or do you just want to go yourself? Or just let you go yourself? I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Why would you want me to go by myself? Well, I feel like I will have the right thing. You know, the good side and out. I'm over here like, okay, remind me.
No, but, like, I don't know. I don't know what you're
talking about. Talk me through it. I mean, I imagine the two of us just going and saying, like, we're reporters,
yeah,
and we're working on this project about Alexis Patterson, and we know you went through a lot of grief with this in 2016, and we really don't want to replicate that again.
Yeah.
And so that's why we really wanted to come here and talk to you.
Then Ashley and I talked about letting Lisa know we would only use her first name so she could avoid more mobs of people coming to her door. Unfortunately, when we reached Lisa's block, there was road construction going on smack in front of her house. We parked down the street and walked up to the door.
Hi, Lisa here.
I wish you could hear her over the construction noise. She smiled and said, "No, thank you," very politely. Then she closed the door. We felt deflated as we walked back to the car. That long drive, all those plans, and we didn't even get a chance to ask Lisa whether she'd be willing to give another DNA sample. But we weren't going to give up. We decided to try the boyfriend's house next. Based on the research I'd done online, I was pretty sure Chad and Lisa had broken up. Even if they were still together, I was starting to think it might be okay. Lisa hadn't gotten angry, so why would he? All we wanted to do was ask him to confirm that he had seen Officer Williamson swab Lisa's cheek for the DNA sample. The address I had found for Chad was easy to find. We parked around the corner and walked up the block. A motorcycle and a pickup truck sat in the driveway, and the garage door was wide open. Someone was probably home. We also noticed a Trump banner covering the entire back wall of the garage. So maybe that someone would not be happy to see reporters on their porch. Ashley and I took some deep breaths. Before we got the chance to knock, a short man with gray hair came to the door.
Hi. Hey, I'm looking for Chad.
That's my son.
That's your son. Okay. So he doesn't live here, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Oh, he does.
He lives with me.
Oh, okay. Is he here?
No.
Okay. Is there a good time that I could come back, or?
He gets off work at 4.
Okay. All right. I'm Gina. I'm from USA Today.
Gina?
Yep. And this is Ashley. Hi.
Hi.
So we'll drop by after 4 then.
Yeah, he gets off at 4 o'clock.
Okay,
we'll try.
Thanks
to reach
a lot.
Then.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
As we walked back toward the car, I was once again feeling pretty optimistic. Maybe I had misjudged the reception a couple of reporters would receive in this town. When we left Chad's house, it was only about 1:30, so we decided to see if we could find Lisa's parents while we waited for him to get home from work. The databases I had checked listed several different addresses for each of them, so I thought they had probably gotten divorced. We decided to look for her dad, Lincoln, first. The most promising address I had for him was in West Unity, Ohio, which is down the road from Brian. Ashley and I drove around in circles a few times looking for the house. We saw one place that looked like it matched the location on Google Maps, kind of set back from the main road. But it was in such bad shape, I didn't think anyone could be living there. The windows were covered, and the porch was sagging, and the paint was peeling. We saw some neighbors sitting outside, and they confirmed that yes, it was Lincoln's house. So we parked the car and walked up to the door. The first time I knocked, no one answered. Then a woman opened the inner door and stared at us. She didn't open the outer door, which was made of wood, so that's why you can't hear her side of the conversation.
Hi there. We're looking for Lincoln. Is there a Lincoln here? Lincoln? Lincoln? Sorry? I'm a reporter. I'm a reporter at USA Today, and I was hoping to talk with him about Lisa, you know, the whole thing about the questions with Lisa and whether she's actually missing and all that. What? Okay.
The woman walked away from the door for a minute, then came back and told us to wait while Lincoln got dressed. I figured that was a good sign. He wouldn't get dressed just to come out and tell us to go away, right? So maybe he was willing to answer a few questions. While we waited, Ashley and I talked strategy.
I still think it's valid to say, you know, our editors wanted us to check this out.
Yeah. So that they're, that like, you know, her mom in Milwaukee is continuing to ask questions.
Yeah, this missing girl's mom.
And say that there's, you know, she thought there was something with police misconduct going on.
Yeah.
So we're trying to just figure out.
We're just trying to check all the bases.
Yeah.
We're sorry to bother you.
Yeah.
You can't hear it very clearly on the recording, but a few minutes later, Ashley says, in a slightly annoyed tone, "Oh my God, the police are here."
Oh my God, the police are here.
Oh no. Did they call the police? Huh. Okay. That's interesting.
As the squad car pulled up, the woman in the house, who turned out to be Lisa's mom, finally opened the door.
I don't understand why you guys keep going out over the place. It's disturbing.
Oh, so I'm really sorry to disturb you.
No, that's not your place to do that. You went to Lisa's house. You went to her boyfriend's house. Why are you doing this?
Because there's still...
Because there's nothing.
Well, but there's still a lot of questions in Milwaukee,
yeah, but
so we're not trying to...
We're not trying to bother anybody. Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm Gina. I'm a
Chief Jones.
I'm a reporter.
Okay.
And so I'm working on a story.
All right.
And so all we did was knock on the door and say,
okay,
we like
got a call to attempted B&E.
In cop jargon, B&E stands for breaking and entering. So, yeah. Lisa's mom called the cops and said we were trying to break into her house. And the police chief decided to check it out personally.
We knocked on the door.
Okay, who called the police?
They went to Lisa's house.
Who called the police, ma'am?
I called the police.
Were they told that someone's trying to break in?
Yeah.
Okay, you got to come right over here. We're at that for you.
So Ashley and I walked down the block with Chief Jones, and another cop talked to Lisa's mom, who eventually admitted we were not trying to break into her house. This situation could have gone very badly. During my reporting career, most of the officers I've encountered out in the field have been stiffly polite at best and threatening at worst. I once did a project about Milwaukee police officers who had broken the law, yet got to keep their jobs. We ran all their pictures on the front page of the paper. Things were scary for me for a while after that. A cop once followed me and my young son through the grocery store. Another one put my name on a hit list. I had the FBI on speed dial in case I got pulled over. None of them ever did anything, but I still get an uneasy feeling around cops. When I first introduced myself to Chief Jones, he refused to shake my hand, which was not a good sign. But once Ashley and I told him why we were there and what we were doing, his entire attitude changed.
All right, I sent a letter to Lisa, and I said, if I don't hear back from you, I'll follow up.
Sure.
I didn't hear back. Mm-hmm. We knocked on the door. She said, no, thank you. And
Ashley is a little hard to hear there, but she's telling him Lisa had a Ring doorbell with a camera, and the video will back up what we're saying.
Trust me, I fully believe you guys are being honest with me. I have no reason to think that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of de-escalate that.
Yeah. Quickly. Oh, I appreciate that. Okay. Yeah.
Obviously, you ladies aren't attempting to break into anything.
No.
Clearly. And what you're telling me makes complete sense, and I have some familiarity with that. So, yeah, I have zero issue with you guys.
No one has ever called the cops on me before. It was a first for Ashley as well. I feel like we got lucky, considering that Chief Jones, no relation to the former Chief Jones in Milwaukee, was the nicest cop I've ever met. It turns out he was friends with the chief and Brian, and he called over there to let them know that we were coming to talk to Officer Williamson about the DNA. She didn't want to speak on tape, but she told us her report was accurate. She did swab Lisa's cheek personally. Still, the fact that Lisa's mom had called the cops left us pretty shaken up. It seemed like an extreme reaction to a reporter knocking on your door. I mean, I know not everyone is happy to see me in those types of situations, but usually if they don't want to do an interview, they just say so and I leave. The fact that Lisa's mom lied to us so that we would be standing on her porch when the cops showed up was pretty unsettling. That, combined with the fact that Lisa's parents were tipped off almost immediately that we had been to her boyfriend's house, was enough to convince Ashley and me that we should not go back there. So we headed home to Milwaukee with no interviews and no DNA. Then I realized the answer had been under my nose the whole time. That's next time on Unsolved.
Do you still have, like, the paternity test results that have Lisa's DNA profile on it?
Yes.
Would you please send me that?
Yes.
Unsolved is written and produced by me, Gina Barton. Ashley Luthern of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel assisted with reporting this season. Our sound engineer is Bill Schultz. Editors are Amy Pyle and Greg Borowski. Our theme music was composed by Evan Johnson. The TV clips you heard in this episode came from TMJ4 News, Milwaukee. For more on Alexis's case or to sign up for our newsletter, visit usatoday.com/unsolved. My team's investigation on disparities in missing children's cases can be found at missing.usatoday.com.